The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Columbia University's administration said yesterday it has begun suspending students hours after demonstrators defied a deadline for clearing the Gaza Solidarity encampment on campus, which fueled similar protests at colleges across the country. Spokesperson Ben Chang said the university had notified students they would be suspended if they did not vacate the encampment by 2 p.m. Eastern time yesterday, after the sides failed to reach an agreement earlier in the day. The site, he said, has created an unwelcoming environment for many Jewish students and faculty, and it has been noisy at the center of campus.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's amazing. I turned on the news early this morning. I could not believe how many protests we've seen, and now violence, right? Windows being smashed, vandalism, destruction. I see a orchestrating hand behind a lot of this. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be here with you today. We're going to have fun this afternoon. We got a lot to get into. Coming up a little later, is it ever okay to tell a lie? I know your instant reaction is like, no, it's never. I was saying to Maggie, what if the bride comes up to you and says, do I look fat in this dress? Is it ever okay? Let me ask you again. Is it ever okay to tell a lie, right? Is it ever okay? The Nazis come knocking at your door. You got any Jews here? Is it ever okay to tell a lie? We'll talk about it coming up. It's kind of a divided issue. Today is National Honesty Day. And I there was a story I came across a couple of years ago that just has always inspired me. I try always to be honest, always, in just about everything I do. But we all have challenges, don't we? We all have the ability to maybe want to just twist the truth a little bit. We'll get into it coming up, and we've got a lot of other things. Oh, the DEA, too, and I'll tell you about that coming up in a moment. Let me share with you right now. It is breaking news right now. The DEA is going to reclassify marijuana. The Biden administration making big, big news just within the hour here. They want to ease marijuana restrictions nationwide, and they're going to take what some are calling right now a historic step towards easing these restrictions on cannabis. As a result of it, stock in cannabis has gone through the roof. It has skyrocketed. Of course it has. The plans to, they're going to announce an interim rule to reclassify the drug for the first time since the Controlled Substance Act was enacted a half a century ago. And the DEA is expected to approve an opinion by the Department of Health and Human Services that marijuana should be reclassified from the most strict schedule to the less stringent Schedule 3, marking the first time that the U.S. government would acknowledge its potential medical benefit and begin studying it in earnest. So there's a lot of things I think we do need to study. I think marijuana is one of those. I think cannabis is one of those. I think the whole world of mushrooms, psilocybin and all that is a new frontier to helping people with PTSD and or post-traumatic stress disorder and a lot of other issues. I think all this has got to be severely evaluated and in the right environment. This is a big move, though. We see more states coming on with the legalization of marijuana, or the decriminalization of it is probably a better way of putting that. A little bit later today, we'll get into that. We'll take a look at the DEA, what it means for you, for your state, maybe for your kids, right, or your grandkids. What's it mean for those who have records because they've been arrested and a little pot on them? Maybe you smoke marijuana. I think we can also talk a little bit about, the moral aspects of all of this. Is it ever okay to smoke weed now that it is no longer illegal? Can you go ahead? A lot of challenges, though, that the DEA will face. We can get into that. I won't dive into all of it right now, but that is some breaking news. I think marijuana, I think we're going to see this green-lighted. I'd be surprised if it's not, but we'll look at it in greater detail coming up here in my final hour of the broadcast today. Back to what we've been seeing on the college campuses across the country. More of these pro-Hamas demonstrations are growing. And I think Maggie and I were talking about it yesterday. She might have even ran some audio of it where they asked protesters, well, what are you protesting? If you want your school to, separate from Israel, why? Are you, what do you want them to decouple from? And she turns to her friend, I don't know. What do we want them to do? Why are we protesting anyway? Right? No clue. No clue. Yet more and more kids are coming out. Only in states like Texas and Florida were these protests nipped in the bud. And schools enjoying a pretty much normal academic life and graduations right around the corner. But at Columbia University, students have occupied, and unfortunately now they're they're damaging property. They damaged Hamilton Hall. They barricaded them inside. The building was also the scene of an anti-war demonstration in the 1970s. But these are two different things. The schools closed down the campus right now to any outsiders. If you are an essential worker, you're allowed in. Other than that, you're not allowed you're not allowed in. And like the University of Southern California, they've canceled their graduation. So it's really unfortunate. You go through all this education. You want to get your degree. You want to celebrate, you know, your graduation, and you're deprived of it. Encampments have gone up at Tulane University in New Orleans, the University of Minnesota. Very early this morning, police were able to shut down an encampment at Cal Polytech in California. But you're going to hear more of the reports. The Today Show actually did a piece on it, and here's more people protesting on these college campuses who aren't even students from the actual school. Check this out.
Overnight, campus protests escalating. Demonstrators occupying a building at Columbia University, smashing windows, barring the doors, and unfurling banners, including one reading Intifada. After protesters circled the campus earlier in the night, the unrest coming just hours after the university started suspending students who refused to leave an encampment after a deadline had passed.
These repulsive scare tactics mean nothing compared to the deaths of over 34,000 Palestinians.
Some faculty also on site, linking arms in front of the demonstrators. A growing number of universities are cracking down on pro-Palestinian protests spreading across college campuses. Overnight, at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, clashes between police and protesters on campus leading to arrests. And at UCLA in the early hours of the morning, authorities in tactical gear moving in during confrontations between dueling demonstrators. Earlier in the day, the students storming through a building and waving the Palestinian flag, some Jewish students frustrated.
I have wholeheartedly always supported the right to like freedom of protest and the freedom of speech, but when that starts to impede upon like our right to education, be able to like freely walk on campus, that's where I have an issue.
State troopers also in riot gear at the University of Texas Austin, detaining demonstrators. Even carrying this person out by their hands, and at one point, students surrounding police who say they use pepper spray to disperse the crowd. The university says it believes a majority of the protesters are not affiliated with the school.
Yeah, no kidding. I think of the parents who paid $60,000, $70,000 for the tuition. I think about the kids who, like that last soundbite you heard from the one student saying, I just want to walk on my campus. You know, you're depriving me of my education. You're depriving a lot of people who worked hard their graduation. I think you can protest. I think there's ways to do it. If you take a look at the protest of the 60s, it was done peacefully. It was done. Yes, there were marches. Yes, we didn't see people, you know, burning flags and breaking these windows and, you know, surrounding and threatening police. I think it's terrible. There's been protests in Utah, Virginia, and New Jersey as well. We'll continue to monitor it. I don't think it's fair to a lot of the other students on those campuses. And I think that I blame really the administration. Those administrators should have said, okay, we appreciate your protest, and we've allowed you your voice yet to this time to get off. Otherwise, the police are coming in, and you're going to be removed. Out of fairness to other people who pay tuition here and want to finish their education and go to graduation. Now, I know not everybody agrees with that position that I hold, but I wonder if less people would enroll at these universities now. I don't know. I do not know. The Diocese of Cleveland, and I've been following these stories for you too, was the target of hackers. I was sharing with you a little bit yesterday about another cyber attack. Diocese of Cleveland has reported that its systems were breached and compromised. There are a lot of personal data, including the social security numbers and credit card numbers and passport information, has been taken. Now, that ends up on the dark web. Good luck, right? It actually happened back in December, but it's the second diocese this year to report such a breach, with the Diocese of Phoenix reporting one earlier in January. So very nefarious, actors here. And it's unfortunate those people have been swept up in that. So say a prayer for me and safeguard your data. I mean, definitely safeguard, change your passwords. Be careful who you give your information to. I didn't get a chance to read all the article, but there is another scam going on right now for kids who are graduating from school and trying to get jobs. They're getting emails from what look like job opportunities, and the person offering them the job uses their professor's name, saying, "You are recommended by Professor so-and-so for this. Can you fill out this application?" And then the student goes ahead and gives their name, their social security number, all this vital information, email, and the bad actors have got all their info. So if you got young graduates, tell them about that, okay? Give them the heads up. I'll try to track that story down. I saw it just in passing earlier today, but speaking of hackers, I thought I'd run that one by you as well. The state of Tennessee has a law now requiring students to see a video presentation on fetal development as part of their curriculum. We had Eric Scheidler on the air with us yesterday, and we were talking about his book, Sharing the Pro-Life Message, kind of a 101 on everything you need to know when you engage in this. And I think I had a caller yesterday, and that's the reason I was going to share the story, who says, you know, we should be teaching kids this stuff in school. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's true. So in Tennessee, they have something known as the Baby Olivia Act, after a video was developed by Live Action called Meet Baby Olivia. And the law cites it as an example of high-quality computer-generated animation or high-definition ultrasound of at least 3 minutes in duration, and it's meant to show students really what happens in the womb so they're not misled by so many of these abortion supporters, because there's a lot of lives there. Let me share a little bit of this with you. Live Action shared the story of Baby Olivia, walking you through the entire stage of human development in the womb. If you get a chance, check it out. And if you can, maybe share the video also on your social media. Here's a little snippet.
This is Olivia. Though she has yet to greet the outside world, she has already completed an amazing journey. This is the moment that life begins. A new human being has come into existence. At fertilization, her gender, ethnicity, hair color, eye color, and countless traits are already determined. She begins to implant in the uterus about 1 week after fertilization. Her cells organize into what we call an embryo. At 3 weeks in 1 day, just 22 days after fertilization, Olivia's heartbeat can be detected. The buds of her arms and legs appear by 4 weeks. She begins to move between 5 and 6 weeks with both spontaneous and reflexive movements. At 6 weeks from fertilization, her brain activity can be recorded and bone formation begins. She can bring her hands together at 7.5 weeks. And separate fingers and toes emerge. She can also begin to hiccup. At the beginning of the 9th week, Olivia will have grown from a single cell into nearly 1 billion cells, and she is now called a fetus. She will suck her thumb and swallow, grasp an object, touch her face, sigh, and stretch. At 11 weeks, she is playing in the womb, moving her body, and exploring her environment. Her taste bud cells have matured by week 12, but are still scattered throughout her mouth. Her mother will first sense Olivia's movements between 14 and 18 weeks, an event called quickening. Beginning at 18 weeks, ultrasounds show speaking movements in her voice box. Around 20 weeks, with a lot of help, babies have survived outside the womb. At 27 weeks, her eyes are responding to light. She can recognize her parents' voices and will even recognize lullabies and stories. Olivia has gone on an amazing journey during these last 9 months. She will soon signal to her mother that it is time for delivery and greet the outside world.
I think it's so neat that little bit there where she says they'll recognize lullabies and songs. Your baby Maggie is going to recognize the rosary because it's prayed every night with Father Rocky.
For sure, yes, correct.
The mantra of the rosary.
Yes.
You saw the video, right?
Yes.
You were saying to me you're surprised this wasn't done earlier. I think that audio probably holds up a lot better in video than it does over audio. So someone may want to check it out.
It is a beautiful video. It's very well done. And I am surprised with the technology that we've had with CGI stuff for, I mean, over a decade now. I am actually surprised that it's taken us so long to create something so simple. It's a beautiful illustration just of the beginning of life and how everything develops. I could see, I mean, that's like it's not even a 5-minute video. How helpful that would be in any health class, in any middle school, people need to know that this is actually how life begins.
Yeah, how beautiful. Do you sing to your baby or?
I do.
What do you guys do?
I do sing to my baby, and Joe sings to the baby too.
Is he a good singer?
He's
not really.
He's he's good. He's good.
You're a charitable wife. That wasn't a quick, oh, yeah, he's great. He's pretty good. He's okay. Well, the baby will love it. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, having your first child is a lot of fun. Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, we're excited.
Well, I'm glad we found that video. You can check that out as well. And
I'll post it on our social media.
My congratulations to State of Tennessee. Good job. All right. Good job. Let's show these to children. Give them truth, right? Allow them to see the truth so that when somebody does come in with the lies, it's a clump of tissues. It's not a baby, right? Now at least they've got something to think about, right? You've at least given them the truth. They might say, no, that's not the case. I'm pretty sure it's a human being. So plant those seeds of truth in those kids. Speaking of the culture of death and how nefarious and evil, destructive, divisive they can be, vandals in Portland, Oregon, pro-abortion vandals, have struck St. Patrick's Church in Portland, Oregon again. Actually, it's the third time that it happened. Catholic Vote, of course, has been tracking this as well, and I want to credit them for this. I've been talking about this for years. They're reporting that back in June of 2021, I think it was, that vandals set fire to the grounds. They spray painted these horrible, very grotesque pro-abortion slogans on the sidewalks. So demonic. It's just so demonic. A month later, they spray painted those slogans on the front doors. And nearly 3 years later, what did they do? They struck again, painting the slogans on both the doors and the sidewalk. It makes a 252nd attack against the Catholic Church in the U.S. since May of 2020. And again, 252 attacks against Catholic churches. If this was government buildings, if this was Planned Parenthood buildings, can you imagine if 252 Planned Parenthood buildings, somebody did this to? The FBI, the police would be all over this. When the draft Supreme Court opinion proposing the reverse of Roe v. Wade was leaked, we saw these attacks spike, and they've spiked ever since then. So a lot going on. So we'll have to continue to pray for the conversion of those wayward souls. One other side note, I always pray outside of my own little universe, outside of Drew's world, if you will. I pray for our country. I pray for other countries. There's a lot of conversion happening right now, not just here in the U.S., but there are a growing number of Catholics in, of all places, instruct me, Belarus, right? The Orthodox stronghold and the ally of Russia is seeing Catholic numbers increase. It's leading them to become politically active against the current dictatorship of Lukashenko. And those fears have been grown over the last several years following the prominent role Catholics have played in the protest following the last elections in Belarus. And you also saw the role of Catholics in Poland before the fall of the Iron Curtain there, right? These fears have fed anti-Catholic attitudes both in Moscow and in Minsk, and now have led to the direct attacks on the Vatican for what one Russian author says it's a direct involvement in the rise of the anti-Russian, anti-Belarusian Catholic movement in Belarus. I don't know how they get that assertion, but what can you do? The governor of New Mexico, Michelle Grisham, is upset with Homeland Security Secretary Alexander Mayorkas. Have you heard about this? She's upset because Border Patrol agents are now seizing marijuana shipments coming into the state. And you're thinking, well, shouldn't they be doing that? Well, they caught Grisham. She's a Democrat again from New Mexico, saying, we look the other way when it comes to drugs coming into the country. Take a listen to this story. Check it out.
They're saying that they're worried about fentanyl, so they're taking all of our cannabis. And they tried to, and they're detaining people. Never have done that. We just use discretion. Look the other way. But the press also knows that Border Patrol is taking a hard stance. And the only way is either we have to adjust it or I have to send you a letter saying you're persecuting the state.
Look the other way. I'm just throwing out there that to you. I want it to be on your radar. With the amount of fentanyl coming across the border and drugs in general, why would you look the other way? It just on the surface makes no sense to me. None. It really highlights this liberal, radical, woke, poisonous, anti-American agenda. That's what we're seeing. This is not good for our country. It is not good. So join me to continue to pray, not just for the conversion of world leaders and for peace in the world, but let's pray for our country and those we put in office. Let's pray for our brothers and sisters, our fellow Americans, that we can, when we go to the elections, when we go to the voting booth, we can put into office well-formed men and women, right, who are moral, who are just. The ramifications of this are far-reaching. They are far-reaching. Hey, today's National Honesty Day. I only have a couple minutes, but I'm going to open the phones. I want to hear from you, too. I'd love to hear your own story of honesty. Have you ever been challenged to be honest, even when it meant, I don't know, causing you some great sacrifice? And you know, honesty's tough. You know, you're doing your taxes. You're challenged to be honest, right? Maybe somebody gives you the wrong money back. You know, you think, oh, I'm already in my car. Do you go back? You know, maybe you're credited at work for having done something. Oh, so-and-so did this. And really, it was somebody else in the company that did it, but you take credit for it. Honesty is the cornerstone of good character. You know, it's a fundamental expression of how you respect others and how you respect yourself. And I think we need honesty. It shapes our moral framework. I watch the news and I get sick. That's why I'd be a terrible politician. I would be a horrible politician because I can't lie. You know, they ask somebody a question, and these politicians are so brilliant. They're so evasive at how they don't answer the questions. Or when I watch some of these politicians and how they gaslight us, how they lie right to our face, I'm thinking, whatever happened to honesty in this country? You know, it shapes our moral framework, and it shapes this country, guides us in truth, and I think it lends to credibility and integrity. I want to share with you a quick story. And then Dr. Janet Smith is going to be joining me. It's the story of a golfer. And I remember hearing this story several years ago. It was during the second stage of the PGA Tour. And I guess it was a qualifying tournament. And this guy, I think his name was J.P. Hayes. Apparently, he discovered that on two shots on one hole, he had unwittingly used a prototype golf ball. And it wasn't approved for competition by the United States Golf Association. Nobody would have known, right? Nobody would have known. And he'd have a full-time spot on the PGA Tour. That's what was on the line for this. Play the game out. There you go, right? But Hayes, on the 12th round of the first hole, reached into his golf bag. He grabbed a ball or his caddy threw him the ball. He played these two shots, a tee and a chip onto the green, marked his ball, and he realized that moment that he was not playing with the same model ball that he began the game with. And by rule, it's a two-stroke penalty. And he realized that there was a penalty. He called over the official and said that the penalty was two shots and that, you know, I had finished the hole with that ball and changed back to the original ball that night in his room. You know, he realized the error of his ways. And he could have said nothing, could have done nothing. But he, aware of the mistake, he turned himself in. And it cost him the PGA Tour card. I mean, think about how much money that is, right? He said, I called an official in Houston that night and said, I think I have a problem. And he says, he was using a particular ball, and he went through it all. I won't go through it. But his decision to turn himself in, I was always struck by. And he refused to blame the caddy for the error, saying, you know, I should have spotted the errant ball. And it speaks volumes, because so often it's easy for us to blame somebody else. You know, the underling at work, the coworker. Oh, no, you know, should I take responsibility? It was their fault, you know, or maybe it's easier to blame someone else for not giving you the right information, right? It was hard. J.P. Hayes disqualified himself for inadvertently using an illegal ball that no one knew. No one knew that he played with. And to me, that was such a beautiful example of integrity. You know, in the Gospel of John, what does Christ tell us? He says, you'll know the truth, and what happens, the truth will set you free. I think of the story of Thomas More, who himself paid the ultimate price for truth, right? He was honest. He didn't lie. He could have saved his life, saved his wife and his children, all the hardship they had to go through. He was the devoted chancellor of England under Henry VIII. And what did he do? Henry VIII wanted to marry Anne Boleyn. He wanted to have all these other wives, right? He wanted a male heir, and he wanted everybody. The only two people who didn't go along with it, Bishop John Fisher and, of course, Thomas More. And he chose to uphold the truth, the teachings of the Catholic Church, rather than comply with the king's demand. And he lost his head for it. Thomas More's final words were really a testament to his integrity. He says, I die the king's good servant, but God's first. And he is such an example of true honesty. That's the ultimate sacrifice, your life. I'd love to hear your story as well. Dr. Smith is going to be joining me. Is it ever okay to tell a white lie? You know, can you tell a small lie? You can join me right now, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Maybe you were recently challenged to speak, to tell the truth. Maybe it cost you personally, you know, or maybe somebody was honest with you. You know, you could have been defrauded out of a lot of money. Maybe it was a contractor. Maybe it was somebody who could have really, maybe it was the mechanic, but they were honest saying, hey, you really don't need this, you know. Feel free to join us, 888-914-9149. We'll talk about honesty when I return.
All the news and issues of the day. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Well, thanks for joining me today. Chaplet is about a half an hour away right now, talking about honesty. It is National Honesty Day, and thinking about that, you know, I always try to be honest. I don't know what you confess when you go to confession to the priest. I mean, do you confess ever being dishonest or lying or not telling maybe the complete truth? You know, in our daily lives, I think we're forced with choices, and some are small and significant, you know, some are large. It might be as simple as returning the extra change given you by the cashier, or might be as substantial as standing by the truth in the face a personal loss. You might lose your job. You might lose your freedom. You know, each act of honesty, I really believe, reaffirms your commitment to truth, though. And it molds your character to the likeness of Christ, who is truth himself. Pray for it. If you have a problem being honest, pray for that gift. So we'd love to hear from you. Dr. Janet Smith joins us. She's an emeritus professor of moral theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. And I thought I'd talk to her just a little bit about whether or not it's okay to tell a white lie. And yeah, feel free to sound off. Do you teach your children about the importance of honesty? Have you ever regretted being honest? Has anyone ever been honest with you and really moved you? Doctor, good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's great to have you here with me. You know, one of the big questions that people sometimes have is, you know, the ethics of being honest. I mean, I would argue, okay, it's important to be honest all the time. However, I was saying to my producer, Maggie, before you came on, before the show began, I said to her, I said, you know, what if somebody, the bride comes out and she says to somebody, do I look fat in this wedding dress? You know, of course I'm not going to say you look fat. Of course I'm going to say, no, you look beautiful, right? The Nazis come knocking on my door and I've got some Jews hidden in my closet. Am I going to say, oh yeah, they're right in that closet for the sake of honesty? Is it ever ethical to not tell the truth? And maybe give me some other examples and your perspective on always being honest.
Well, you might be surprised to learn is that the Catholic Church doesn't have an absolutely clear teaching on this issue. As a matter of fact, it seems that the Catechism teaches two different things in two different versions. When the Catechism came out in 1894, it said that what was wrong was, and it speaks not only about, it talks about signification, which means communication in form of speech or deed. And they said it's wrong when it's meant to lead into error someone who deserves to know the truth. That's what the first version of the Catechism said. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Because there are people who don't deserve to know the truth.
Right.
And great harm can be done if you tell them the truth, such as, yes, of course, there's Nazis upstairs. Should I come get them for you? I mean, if someone says, Jews, there's Jews in my attic. Can I bring them down? To give to you. It seems to me the Nazis have no right to know the truth. Now, your boss, if you, took a bunch of supplies from the company, and your boss says, did you take those? And in fact, you did. You need to tell him you did. You might have a good reason or bad reason, but he deserves to know the truth about that, even if it might lose you your job. If you were to say, yeah, I absolutely needed some gasoline in a similar place, I could find it. I was desperate. And he says, no, you can never take anything away from here. We that's our safety supply. Too bad for you. You're fired. You have to tell the truth because he deserves to know the truth about that. So it's not always that it's okay to say something false when there's a severe consequence that might result if you don't. That's not the determining feature of the decision. The determining feature is whether or not the person deserves to know the truth. In the second volume of the Catechism, it dropped that phrase, deserves to know the truth.
Huh.
It makes it sound very absolute, that it's simply you're just not allowed to lead into error anyone by speech or deed. So it's I go with the first version of the Catechism, and it's interesting that the letter that accompanied the second version of the Catechism claims that there is no contradiction, there is no substantial change between the first and the second on any point. And you say, well, that seems like a huge difference to me. I conduct my life very differently if I think I have to tell the truth to everybody all the time on every possible occasion, or if there are occasions where someone doesn't deserve to know the truth. And I could say something false to that person or mislead them in some way. So I'm a proponent of that first version of the Catechism. And I think that's a common sense point of view. And I also think there's a very fairly sophisticated metaphysical justification for it. But it's amazing after all these years that the Church could do something like that within a short space of 5 years, teach something very different about the same issue. You think, well, gee, wasn't that settled a long time ago?
Yeah.
Wasn't that settled with the commandment? Says the commandment, of course, is interesting. Thou shalt not bear false witness, which is only, honestly, a very technical kind of statement, which is largely swearing in court. I can't accuse someone falsely of a crime. Now, it extends to much more than that, just like the commandment against adultery. I mean, that includes homosexuality, that includes fornication, it includes any sexual sin. But the most serious sexual sin is that against the good of marriage directly. So it just gives us one. And so the
yep.
commandment against bearing false witness has been expanded to more, rightly so.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean that you can never tell a falsehood, in my view.
Well, I want to talk about everything from lying in sports to politics. I get so frustrated by being gaslit by some of these politicians. Yeah. Let's jump to the phones. A number of people would like to dive in. Doctor, you can respond to Al directly. He's calling us from Aston, Pennsylvania. Al, good afternoon.
Drew, how are you?
Hey, well, thanks, Al.
Big fan of yours, Drew, but on certain things that you're saying, you're being a little delusional.
Good.
I'll tell you why. He's saying good. Now, I like you, Drew. You're cool, man.
Tell me, brother.
And I want to congratulate Maggie on when she has the birth of her child. God bless her.
Yeah.
She seems like a beautiful, beautiful person.
Yeah,
beautiful
she is. Person. Good soul.
But anyway, getting back to what you're talking about, it depends. I'll give you an example. I was talking to your producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just listening to me. NBA game.
Yeah.
And listen, I want the doctor. Game 7, the other team has no challenges. I watched the Lakers, which I was glad to lose to Denver last night. Okay? Because I can't stand the Lakers.
Okay.
But to make a long story short, let's just say the other team's out of challenges. And the guy's driving the lane, the closing seconds. Game 7 to win a championship.
Yeah.
And he really don't get fouled, but the referee calls the foul. Now, do you think that player, which would never happen, and they're not going to override, is going to go over to the referee and say, gee, ref, he really didn't foul me. You called the foul, but he really didn't foul me. Or the person you're talking about, I don't believe in stealing. No, that's wrong. You're an immoral person, okay, if you do that. But nobody is going to go and say, yeah, I did that, if it's something that is missing or something that was, and lose their job. And the doctor has to realize that. So what do they do if they have a family? Hear me out.
Well, you don't
they
steal.
Have a family. So what do you... No, you're right. You're right. You don't steal. But nobody's going to admit to it if they're going to lose their job. And then what do they do to support their family?
Well,
they're out of work. So in certain situations, I agree with it.
Yeah.
A lot of situations, I agree with it. You tell the truth.
Good. Al, let's talk about it for a minute. Let me, because a lot of people want to get in. Let's get Dr. Smith's take on this, because and I like the sports one, because that's a tough one. You know, you tip the ball, or you know, whatever, you foul somebody, you get away with it. You say, hey, ref, I fouled the person. You know, they should get an extra shot.
Let me know when you see that, Drew. You'll never see.
No, you won't in sports. In fact, I was reading an article earlier today about it, where they say in the world of sports, kids are often taught to try to get away with that type of stuff. And most, you know, same thing in football and all these different things. If you can, you know, get away with something, they want, they try to do that. But to this case of the golfer, he was honest and it cost him, you know, the tournament. That was noble and honorable. But Dr. Smith, let me bring you in here. You know, in the world of sports, it could cost you a championship, it could cost you a game. You heard, I think, part of the commentary on Mr. Hayes, who, you know, was honest about using the wrong type of ball and was disqualified as a result of that. You heard Al's comments. Where do you draw the line on that? And to his other case, you've taken something from the company and they say, we want to know who did it. You know you're going to lose your job if you come forward. In a case like that, do you come forward because honesty is the right thing to do? Or do you, do you not say anything and just move on?
It's not a question of not. There's a very big difference between telling a referee how to do his job and volunteering the information as opposed to being asked. The church doesn't say anything about the need to volunteer information that might change. You haven't lied if you haven't said anything and you weren't asked anything. So I'm not in tennis. It happens with some frequency that if a ball is incorrectly called or something's incorrectly called, the player who could suffer from it admits to it. It says, no, it didn't happen that way. I lost the point. I didn't win the point. That's considered to be good sportsmanship. I don't know about football and other sports. I watch a lot of tennis. And it's considered to be that someone says, no, the ref called it out, but it was really in. I need to lose the point. So you guys can figure out that about. And of course, games are very different from everything else. I mean, obviously, a lot of money can ride on it. But from my point of view, I'd rather win any game I win honestly than benefit from a bad call.
Yeah.
Now, some people want to say, well, bad calls are routine. It just happens in sports. Sometimes it goes some way. Sometimes it doesn't. That's okay, too. It's a blankety blank game. All right. That's all it is. Might be an expensive game, but it's just a game. But the question of lying to your boss because you might lose your job, even though you did the wrong thing that you shouldn't have done, I think that that's part of the reason why you don't do those things, is you might lose your job. That's the problem. It's not telling truth or not telling the truth. You never should have done it. And it seems to me you have to own up to it and then pray like crazy that God will reward you for being honest. I mean, otherwise you're saying it's okay to do evil to achieve good.
Yeah.
And we both. That's exactly what we believe you can't do. You always have to do good.
Yeah.
And if there's bad consequences, what happened to Jesus?
Yeah, I know.
He got crucified, all right? I think that there's very different situations have been put in front of me here.
Mm-hmm. No, I know. I mean, Al had very extreme examples, and I think you handled it well. Doctor, hold the thought, though. I have to take a break. My gratitude to everyone who's holding. I'm going to be right back. You know how this works. I have to just take a short break. We'll be back in a minute. We'll take a few more calls, as today is National Honesty Day, and we are taking a look at, truth and honesty, and when it is acceptable, if ever, to maybe not tell the truth. That and more right ahead.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. It's the truth and nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Hey, thanks for joining me. The chaplet's about 10 minutes away. I'm joined right now, if you're just tuning in, with Dr. Janet Smith, an emeritus professor of moral theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. And we are taking a look this afternoon at honesty. You know, it's a challenge for all of us to be honest. Sometimes the consequences are great. Sometimes, you know, they can be charitable. Doc, let's go right to the phones. Denise is in Chicago. She's got a comment for you as well. Denise, good afternoon.
Hi, Doctor. I appreciate your comments today. I wanted to say, when you're dealing with a person who has a serious addiction, one of the steps says that you must be careful about the truth because it could cause a relapse. It could cause an emotional breakdown. So, in other words, trying to tell the truth to someone could injure or harm them. So you can't always tell the truth, and it has to be the right time and maybe in the right circumstances.
Gotcha.
So sometimes the truth can harm people in ways we can't imagine. And yes, we want to be honest, but sometimes the truth can hurt too much for people who are extremely vulnerable.
All right, Doctor.
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect example. And it's one where there shouldn't be, in a sense, any hesitancy there. You know, for instance, if the addict says, do you think I can do it? Do you think I can make it? And you don't, all right? From everything you've seen, you don't think they can. But what are you going to say? You're going to say, yes, you can do it. I'm with you. I'm behind you. Do it. This man was a small child who's trying to, you know, 10-year-old trying to play basketball, and he's no good. You know, but he's going to get the ball, and he's got to make a shot. And what do you say to him?
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to do it. He says, Dad, can I do this? You say, you bet, hon. You can do it. And you don't think he can do it for anything. And if he doesn't, you think it's a miracle.
Right.
But the purpose of speech in those instances is not to convey the truth. And that's one thing where I honestly think Thomas Aquinas erred, is that he thought the purpose of speech, is always to convey the truth. And I think communication, speech, has many other purposes than conveyance of truth. You can talk about a different kind of truth, but I just like to say, when you're trying to encourage someone that you don't believe can do what they need to do, but you do know they're more likely to do it if you say you believe that they can do it,
right,
than if you didn't. And same thing with, a demented person whose spouse has died.
Yeah.
And they've forgotten, and they say, when is Dad coming home tonight? And he's not coming home. But you say, oh, he's at the Elks. He'll be back later. And they forget even to ask the question. So the answer doesn't harm them at all. But if you say, oh, no, Dad died 5 years ago, then they cry. They grieve all over again. They feel embarrassed that they forgot that their husband died.
Yeah.
you say, what is the point in saying your husband died? Maybe. I mean, maybe you can come up with some good fiction, right. But I don't think it's necessary.
Let me sneak another quick call in here. Robin is in Woodbridge, California. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a situation at work to where, you know, there was a situation in having to be honest could affect, like you were saying earlier, your job.
Yeah.
Yet the consequences of not telling the truth, you know, could affect your job or the person in a significant way. So I told the truth, and in telling the truth, because I, like you, I understand to be honest is the best thing that you can do, to be honest with people. And at the same time, I see the situation where sometimes speaking the truth, yeah. Like for instance, at Mass, I go to Mass. After Mass, I've noticed that people are talking, and it really bothers me. I'm there before the Lord, mm-hmm. of course, the tabernacle's there, and these people are gathering like they're in a Protestant church or something, you know? And I want to say something. I don't, because if I say something that, you know, it should I say something or should I not say something? Yeah. It's like the truth is it's wrong, right, you know, for these people to, I believe, disrespect the Lord in that way at church, at Mass, after Mass.
Hey, so. Robin, thank you for calling and for sharing your thoughts. I have a minute left. So, Doctor, let me give you the final thoughts here. You heard Robin as well. A lot of people want to get in.
Well, again, good questions all. I mean, a lot of it has to do with responsibilities. Whose responsibility is it to say if someone's doing something wrong at Mass? Is it everybody's responsibility in the church? I had I'll try to do this quickly, but once I saw a really immodestly dressed girl at Notre Dame when I was teaching at Mass, I'm thinking someone should tell her. I'm thinking, but who? And I'm thinking, oh, I'm a female faculty member here, maybe me. I think I don't want to do this mm-hmm. for anything in the world. But after all, I prayed about it, and I said, God, put her in my path if you want me to say something to her. And he did in such a way that I had to. Yeah. And that's one way. I wouldn't be lying not to say something to her. That's very different. Not saying something is very different from being asked a question and responding.
Well, Doctor, I got to hold it right there. I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll have to pick this up again. Appreciate you being here. Have a great day, okay?
All right. Thank you.
You got it. That's Dr. Janet Smith. And always great to have her here with us. Unbelievable. In the studio with us right now, too, is Father Rocky. He just popped in. I went to make sure I gave him a few minutes to talk with you as well. Father, we were just talking about honesty. I know that this weekend we're going to be together coming up. Fill us in on what's going on.
Great. I apologize for taking Jenna Smith out there.
Not at all.
I have the greatest respect for all the great work she's done. But yes, I did want to let our audience know that the walk to Mary's on. It looks like the weather's going to be perfect. Not too hot, not too cold, not too sunny, not too cloudy. And not too dry, not too wet. All right,
so 65 degrees.
We pray to Our Lady of good enough weather. And for the folks who can't come to the Walk to Mary, I'll take your prayer intention with me in my backpack. Go to our website, relevantradio.com. Right there on the landing page, you can type in your prayer intentions. So I bring them in my backpack, and they're expecting a record crowd, 6,000 people or so. And I hope to do the whole thing again, all 21 miles from the National Shrine of St. Joseph at the College of St. Norbert to Pier, all the way out to the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. And every stop along the way, there's a church, right? We started a church at 7 in the morning, and then 7 miles later, the Church of St. Peter and St. Paul and the Blessed Sacrament is there. And then 7 miles later is the Church of the Holy Cross, right, where everybody has lunch. And then 7 miles later is Our Lady of Champion. Yeah. At the end, we'll have Mass with the bishop. There'll be other Masses during the day, but the word is spreading. And like Maggie and I like to tease on the radio, if you want a house, if you want a spouse, if you want a baby, don't say maybe. Come to the Walk to Mary this Saturday, May 4th. If you need a liver, Mary delivers. You need a deal? It's for real. You need some hope?
Don't say nope.
Come to the Walk to Mary this Saturday. And you're going to be there.
Keeps
adding up, right?
Are you going to celebrate Mass, too, there?
I will. I celebrate Mass, at the end of the day, right? And I'm really looking forward to it.
Right? So you have the last mass there. So
that's usually,
good.
Yeah.
That's, you know, good.
And for folks coming, if you've never done it before, do read the instructions. You want to make sure you've got the right kind of clothing, a couple of pairs of socks. You put some moleskin on your big toes and your heel, and you drink water. And I usually take an Advil every 7 miles.
Wow.
And you're going to do what, 35 miles?
I thought you. It's a tough one. You start at the National Shrine of St. Joseph.
That's right.
And it's 21 from there to the right. Other one. I'm probably going to be honest, probably do 7.
All right.
Maybe 14. I told our mutual friend Jay I would probably do 14. I would do the first 7 and the last 7.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm working it out. I'm working my way
but
up there.
But you're going to start there at the morning in the beginning.
That's the plan. Maggie's thinking of that, too. We'll see. Wow. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll be out there. We're going to pass out hats and sunglasses and tote bags.
The sunglasses are cool. The petitions. So,
yes. Go to relevantradio.com. Right on our website, there's a button there where you can type in your prayer intention if you can't come. Even if you can't come, type your prayer intention. Yeah. I print them all out. I put them in my backpack, and off we go.
You print them all out.
Yeah. Well, we print 30,000.
Yeah, that's
the limit, 30,000. 100 pages.
Got a strong back. He's got a very strong back. All right, so best way to get information for this is
relevantradio.com. Right there. And Our Lady of Champion, right?
Okay, perfect.
WalkToMary.com.
Petition. Go in there now. Put that petition in. We'll pray for you during the chapel. Father prays the rosary every night at 7.
I do.
And he's going to carry.
And Maggie's there, too.
She is. Maggie will be there, too.
Yep.
But send him those petitions. He carries them every year. And we'll end up at this beautiful national, beginning at the National Shrine of St. Joseph, and end at Our Lady. Father, look forward to seeing you on the trail.
Great to
see
you.
We'll talk again this week.
You bet.